You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined, I am thrilled to say, by a woman whom I regard as one of the real heroes in the war for the free world, largely unsung because the work she does is not generally understood or certainly appreciated by most people outside of our military. And that is the work that Elaine Donnelly at the Center for Military Readiness performs to support the military and its culture against the efforts by those who are, well, I guess at best indifferent to both, and at worst wish them ill, to keep social experimentation or engineering from essentially breaking the only military we have. This has been a tough couple of weeks for those of us who care about the sorts of things Elaine Donnelly works on, and I'm very pleased to have her with us to talk a bit about what has happened with respect to this issue of transgenders in the military. There's much more on all of this at her superb website, cmrlink.org, and I commend it to you, but we'll talk with her about it now. Elaine Donnelly, thank you so much for joining us. A happy new year, despite it getting off to a somewhat rocky start.
Happy new year to you too, Frank, and thank you for that kind introduction. Yeah, so we need to talk about what really happened here over the Christmas New Year's weekend. Four federal district court judges and two courts of appeals have ordered the Department of Defense to recruit persons identifying as transgender starting on New Year's Day yesterday. The Department of Justice failed to file an immediate emergency appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they used as their excuse a reference to a pending Defense Department study of the issue. This is a dereliction of duty because it doesn't hit the main point at all. Under Article 3 of the United States Constitution, the federal courts have no authority to make policy regarding the military. So the Department of Justice should have protected the constitutional rights of the president by filing this emergency appeal. They've done it before on other national security issues.
They did it, in fact, at the appellate level. So it was inexplicable why they weren't doing it at this level. Elaine, you've just described a dereliction of duty. This is all the more remarkable insofar as the president himself, first with a tweet and then in a direct order to the military, said we're not going to enlist transgender individuals. Where do the courts get off saying that, we are? And secondly, how could it possibly be that neither the Justice Department, nor the Defense Department, nor the Department of Homeland Security, nor the National Security Council, nor the Chief of Staff of the White House or the Counsel to the President seemingly thought this was a constitutional crisis?
It is a constitutional crisis. The issue is not just the military transgender policy alone, but who gets to decide what the policy will be. By failing to petition the Supreme Court for a stay after they did file for appeal at the appeals court level, in essence, the Department of Justice has tacitly conceded that federal judges can make military policy and establish medical standards for enlistments. There is a study pending, and guess what? It's being done by an Obama holdover, a man named Anthony Curta. He was one of the architects of the transgender policy that President Trump has said he wants to first study and then revoke in various ways. So President Trump should ask some questions here. Why did Secretary Mattis assign this Anthony Curtin, the Obama holdover, with a record of LGBT activism both before and after the Trump inauguration to chair this so-called panel of experts that is supposed to produce a report and recommendations on this issue by February 21. Another question is, why does the Justice Department think the courts will view the result of that study, if that's what you want to call it, more favorably than the pro-transgender RAND report that came out under Barack Obama? And why have the Justice Department attorneys just conceded the point that judges have the right to decide enlistment standards? And here's another thing. If this is being done under court order, and it is, why, instead of making plans for what kind of underwear transgender recruits should wear at the military entrance processing stations called the MEPS, they're making plans in excruciating detail what kind of underwear to wear. What they should be doing, and should have done already, is have conditions in the enlistment contract saying, we're doing this under court order. We're going to pursue litigation. If later on the litigation says that we do have the right to change policy, that contract will be void, the person will be released from active duty, and any subsequent applications for accession or enlistment, reenlistment, will be processed in accordance with the policy of the current administration.
This is so incredible to me that that kind of essentially safety net wouldn't be put into place just as a matter of protecting the institutional latitude for addressing changed circumstances down the road. It just seems malfeasant. Let me bring you back, Elaine Donnelly, quickly to something that you said earlier, though, because I think what's so troubling to me is that the precedent of having federal judges interpose their objections to and effectively, if I can use the expression, trump those of the directions of the president. What's to say it'll stop with who's allowed to be in the military? Why would it not also be the case that some federal judge somewhere in the judiciary wouldn't say, oh, I have objections to what the president intends to do with the people that we've let into the military? I mean, where does this stop?
It doesn't stop. The excuse that we're waiting for a study is as lame as, let's say the 2016 Trump campaign allowed the Federal Election Commission to declare Hillary Clinton the winner of the presidential race early on election night, relying on vote counts later to undo that result. Once you go down this road, it's pretty hard to undo the damage. The Department of Justice, where's the strategy to fight and win? On principle. And the principle is that under the United States Constitution, that the president has powers in Article 2, Section 2, that says the president makes policy for the military. He is commander-in-chief. Judges, Article 3, nothing. They have no power to make policy. Where is the strategy to fight and win on that principle? And the second principle is that any change should improve mission readiness and combat lethality. How does obsessing about what kind of underwear people wear at the Mets improve combat readiness and combat lethality? It doesn't. Everyone knows it. But there are those in the administration who want to cave.
One of the reasons why they're obsessing about the underwear is that there will be people of the opposite sex in the showers, in the bathrooms, in the barracks of their counterparts. It's just unbelievable. And again, it seems to me, on the face of it, and this is again why your work at the Center for Military Readiness is so vital, Elaine, it seems so manifestly at odds with what we want the military to be doing and what we need them to do, for heaven's sake. I just wonder, as we're looking at this, you've taught me a lot about gender dysphoria. Just very quickly, what is the condition that these people are manifesting, and why is that inconsistent with readiness of our military, as well as good order and discipline?
Until recently, gender dysphoria, confusion about gender identity, was on the list of a number of physical and psychological conditions that make you ineligible for military service. It is most unfortunate. You have to have compassion for people who are confused about their gender identity. But in the military, it is a readiness issue because treatments are extensive, very time-consuming, very expensive for surgeries when surgeries are involved. It's something that puts heavier burdens on everyone else. It's a step too far to say this particular faction, just this one, is so politically correct that it's going to be treated differently than other conditions that make you ineligible for military service.
Right. And one can anticipate that the people with flat feet will be in court demanding entry too. Elaine Donnelly, so much more to talk about. I look forward to doing so with you early and often in this year. Thank you so much for joining us today and for your great work, including a lot of it through the holiday weekend on this particular issue of transgender. Check out that work at cmrlink.org, the Center for Military Readiness. Elaine, thank you so much. Next up, Gordon Chang joins us. We'll talk about the latest out of North Korea, China, and Pakistan right after this.